We'll go to agenda item number 7, report and possible discussion on legislative update by Matt Phillips, government customer relations manager.
Okay, I'll talk with y'all. Maybe we'll discuss this waiting topic. Can everybody hear me before I start?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, what I'm going to try to do is give you guys as many as I possibly can about the upcoming session. I'm understanding that, you know, the crystal ball rarely ever works in this case, but you know, I'll do the best I can with the info that I have. Go to the next slide. So when we meet for session in January, one of the probably the bigger things that I think we're all going to see, those of us that have worked in Capitol for a while, is we're going to have a very different makeup in our legislature. And this is something that we kind of saw last session, where we have a lot of turnover in the House, but there are going to be a lot more new faces. If you look at this
up here, nearly half of the members of the House are going to be sophomores or freshmen. So you got sophomores that are like 60th in seniority in a 150 member body. So it's very different than what we're used to seeing. And that's just a result of a lot of turnover. You've had a lot of folks retire. You've had a lot of folks get beat. And so we're going to have a lot of new faces. While the smart money is on us to keep the same speaker that we have, and I would probably tell you that all the way up until the vote, there are going to be a lot of new committee chairs because at least 9 of them resigned last session. So we're going to see a very different looking body in terms of the House, which is you know, somewhat normal, but a little bit more so than last time. Now, in the Senate, that's where things are going to look a lot different. And the main reason being, the Senate tends to develop kind of a little bit of continuity and personality. Their terms are longer for the most part. So you end up seeing a lot of the same faces all the time. We've had several retirements from the Senate after this last session. And we could have as many as, that says 6, now 7, because we recently had a member of the Senate pass away in Senator Mario Gallegos from Houston. So you're going to have as many as 7 new members of a 31-member body. The Senate's going to have a very different personality than we're used to seeing. So it's going to be, you know, a very different makeup. And we've already had several new committee chairs appointed. The Lieutenant Governor recently reshuffled committee chairmanships. He moved a few people. Some would say he busted a few people, as they like to say. Things are going to look quite a bit different. Now, in terms of the committees that we work on, particularly natural resources, I think they're going to stay relatively the same. I think we'll still have the same chairman. I think we'll have most of the same membership, but we'll see. While the new chairman have been named, the actual committee assignments that make up those committees have not been completed yet. So let me go to the next slide. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the major policy issues that I think the ledge will deal with in addition to the stuff that we work on exclusively. The first one's the budget. Now, that is the only thing, and you hear me say this a lot, that's technically the only thing the legislature has to do when they meet. Now, they always end up doing a lot more than that, but if they only did this, they would complete their constitutional duty and they could go home. You know, last session was a very bad budget session by any measure. Had a very large budget deficit, and there was a need to cut a lot of things and do a lot of things in order to pass a balanced budget, which is a constitutional requirement. It's funny because a lot of folks are thinking that this next session looks better because our economy has improved, oil and gas revenues are up, rainy day fund is full, or at least close to full. It's got roughly $9 billion in it. But the problem is, in order to balance the budget last session, they had to do several funky little things in terms of accounting tricks in order to actually pass a balanced budget. And what a lot of that included was deferring payments on very critical things like Medicaid until the next biennium, the one that we're about to go into. So when the legislature shows up in Austin in January, they're going to show up immediately in a budget hole. They're going to at least owe $4 billion in Medicaid payments. They're also going to owe some money in terms of education payments to the permanent school fund that they delayed until this next biennium. So while tax revenue wise things look a little bit more rosy, they got a lot of problems to fix when they show back up. So it's not going to be as easy or as good as everyone, I think, tends to think it is. There's also the dedicated funds issue, and that's something that has gotten a lot of play during the interim. And that's the idea that there are certain funds or certain fees that are collected that are meant to go into dedicated funds. probably a very good one to think about is a sporting goods sales tax, which is meant to go towards funding state parks. The problem with that is, while that fee is collected and while it goes into that fund, that money is very rarely appropriated for that use. It's usually held in that balance and used to show a positive revenue in order to balance the budget. There are a lot of folks who believe that that is untruthful, it's disingenuous. It's not being truthful with taxpayers or fee payers when they pay a fee. So there's a discussion that'll likely happen, and this started really with Speaker Strauss, about changing or getting rid of the use of dedicated funds to balance the budget. And that sounds great. I personally think it's a great idea. However, it's been a major part of the budget for such a long time, it's hard to just take it away that quickly, because then you'll have an even bigger hole than the one you already have. So while I think they'll discuss it, they're going to have to do it prudently and probably in phases, because you can't just immediately take that money away that quickly. It's been a foundation of the budget for far too long in order to do that. School finance, education. I'm sure most of you who read the papers are aware that there's currently a pending lawsuit at the district court on our school finance system. This happens once every 5-10 years. School districts and the school interest groups have sued the state, basically saying that our current system of funding schools is both inequitable and unconstitutional. Again, this is something that tends to come up usually every 5 or 10 years. The legislature tends to wait until the courts tell them there's a problem before they try to fix it. However, I do think that'll still be a discussion when the ledge meets in January. That court case just started earlier, I think it was actually last week. It's expected to run at least into January, if not all the way into the summer. Nobody really knows exactly when that'll be over. So the ledge may wait until they're done to take that up, or they may try to do something proactive. Also, with regard to education, there were a lot of cuts made in the last budget that I talked about to education programs. So there will at least be discussions on restoring those cuts back to the budget, which will be yet another big thing to try to get in terms of money, at least roughly $3 billion. When you don't have a lot of billions, that's hard to do. There'll also be the issue of school choice or vouchers. There have been many that have said that is the voter ID bill of this next session. So it will be one that they spent a lot of time discussing. It'll be one that could bug up the works quite a bit, and so we'll just have to see where that goes. Go to the next slide. Now I'm getting more into kind of what we work on, water. So about, I don't know, for the last four sessions, we've been saying, okay, this next session is going to be the water session. This is going to be the one where we pass our next Senate Bill 1, Senate Bill 2, or Senate Bill 3. We've all been kind of thinking that's going to happen. But there really is a feeling, and based on the leadership and Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst and Speaker Strauss who have named water a priority, there's a feeling that coming out of the drought of 2011, that put into really sharp focus the current strain on our current water supplies and the need to not only have a state water plan, which we do have, but to fund it and to start implementing it. So I do think, in addition to a couple of those other topics like the budget and like education, I do think you will see a lot of discussion on funding the state water plan and actually starting to implement some of the projects that are in it in some of the regions. Now, it's going to be a tricky discussion, and the main reason it's going to be a tricky discussion is you've got to have a funding source, and a lot of times that involves a new fee or a new tax, and you've got a conservative legislature that doesn't like the idea of fees and taxes. So, you know, it's at least going to be a highly and hotly debated issue. And they're going to look at all kinds of different fees and taxes, whether it's a bottled water tax, which technically would be repealing an exemption, not adding a new tax, but still. They're going to look at fees on electric bills. They'll look at fees on water taps. So they'll look at any number of things. There's a possibility that if they cannot get a new fee approved, which is highly possible, they could look at endowing the state water plan or creating a one-time funding chunk that they would send to it, possibly from the rainy day fund, up to $500 million, $1 billion, to at least initially infuse the plan to start funding it. But that also takes a two-thirds vote in order to tap the rainy day fund, which is, you know, not always easy to get, and some people don't want to tap it. So, again, it's going to be a highly divisive issue, but it's one that at least leadership believes the legislature should discuss and consider because it's too important, and the drought showed us that. And we will obviously be very involved in that discussion as a water supplier, as someone who has projects in the water plan, in trying to make sure that that the legislature doesn't necessarily just throw money at the issue. We need to make sure that we try to prioritize the projects in the state water plan, that we use this limited amount of funding as smartly as possible, and that we don't just say, okay, here's $1 billion, go do it. You know, we need to do it smart. We need to implement those projects that make sense, and not necessarily focus on those ones that don't. Next slide. I'm going to get into more BRA-centric policy issues. Now, per the resolution that was approved by the board at the last meeting, we'll be working on a bill to very similar, if not identical, to House Bill 3031 to sell the remaining residential and commercial lots. It is something that we will be working with those legislative offices that represent the PK area on. It is something that we'll definitely be involved in the drafting of, along with many others, as those bills usually tend to be. That is one that per the board resolution we are agreeable to the extent that it meets those parameters, so we'll be working to pass that. Now, there may, and anytime we talk about land sales at PK, that opens the door to the possibility of other land being legislatively discussed to be sold, and I definitely think that will be a possibility in this next session. Obviously, the last time that we did that, we had the Set Ranch issue, which popped up, and that's not to say we won't have another similar type issue pop up in this next session, and it's one that we will keep an eye out for and bring to you and get your guidance as that happens. System operations permit, you know, I kind of sum that up by saying it's a big water permit and it's a big target. You know, we're very close to its completion, and I would not be surprised to see legislative attempts to circumvent the permitting process or hijack that permit and somehow make it either more difficult to get, change what we get out of it, change what we can do with it. And so we will definitely be vigilant and be playing defense related to that permit because it's too important to us, and it's something that we've been working on since 2004. So got to get it. Next slide. Water master issue. Now, something that has recently come out is, you know, the TCEQ is going to meet, and after having looked at the possibility of a water master in both the Brazos and the Colorado and studying that issue and analyzing it, they have, at least the executive director of TCEQ will recommend to the commission on Wednesday that they not create one for the Brazos or the Colorado, but specifically for the Brazos, and for various reasons. Now, that said, that does not stop proponents of a water master in the Brazos from seeking a legislatively created water master. And I do believe that is a distinct possibility this next session. I think we will see a bill that will create a water master in the Brazos. So it's something that we will be involved in, that we will be in the discussions on. We have thus far in front of TCEQ maintained neutrality on the issue because we see it both ways. We have customers on both sides of the issue. When it becomes a legislative issue, we'll have to get much closer to a position. And I think where we tend to lean is, as long as certain very important parameters are met, a water master could be okay. As long as it covers the entirety of the basin, as long as it's properly funded and it actually works, it can't just be, you know, a halfway effort. That it, you know, if you're going to put a water master on the Brazos, it needs to function. It needs to have all the resources it needs. And so, you know, there are certain things that we will want to see in something like that in order for us not to be opposed to it just for the sake of our customers who are themselves opposed to it. And then lake levels. And I bring this up because it's something that we deal with and that lots of other water suppliers deal with as well. And it's an issue that we heard a lot more about as we went out and did our water management plan meetings. But I'd like to point out that it is a broader statewide issue. Like I said, there are other water managers, reservoir managers that are dealing with this. And lakeside interests are seeking a more vocal seat at the table in terms of water planning and what our water future looks like, and understandably so. I mean, they're a part of the equation. And it's something that I think will elevate itself to the legislative level, and it has before. I think it will more so as lakes begin being used more for their intended purpose, which is water supply, and you see lake levels get lower like we did in 2009 and 2011. Our way of looking at this is obviously it'll be something that we tend to play defense on. As a water supplier, we need to be able to operate those reservoirs for water supply, and they serve a very important purpose. If, as part of this discussion, the interest or the scales are tipped more in favor of local economic interest or lakeside interest as opposed to the broader state economy, which is what we plan for and what we're looking at in terms of our state water planning, then we have a problem. If lake levels are mandated to stay at full, close to full, near full, then there is a massive amount of water that is now taken off the table, both from the standpoint of future use, from the standpoint of contracts that we have already written for folks to use. So it's an issue that has very broad and very scary impacts or potential impacts on our statewide economy and on us as a water supplier. So it's something that we have to be cognizant of and that we have to make sure we're involved in terms of the legislature having that discussion. So I bring it up just to kind of bring it to your attention. I think that's my last line, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Help me understand what the role of a water master is.
Okay, and I may have some of my friends here help me, but what a water master essentially does is it's created specifically for a basin, and they, and this is my way of explaining it, in real time enforce water rights seniority. So they make sure that senior water right holders are getting their water first, and it's not just done essentially how it is in the basin today, which is technically honor system is the best way to look at it. It's assumed that everyone's operating based on their seniority date. A water master literally in real time enforces that. So meters, you're looking at water meters on intakes, and they make sure that you're only taking your water when you're allowed to and when it's your time.
Two things there. Some of the people who are on the other side of the argument feel that this will create more water for them down in the lower basin, and that's not necessarily true. It does not create water. It's just the existing water, and it's then put under a radar gun that says, burp, your time's up, now it's your time. And rather than you kind of can get longer and do whatever. It's a very, in one way it's scientific, and another way it's not scientific, and it goes back to where you sit and where you stand, about where you need to have, where you want water. And it definitely, it, you send it downstream, it affects the upstream. If you keep it upstream, it affects the downstream. And that's the dilemma.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
What's our position as a river authority on it? Do we want them or don't want them?
Sorry?
Do we want them or don't want them?
Well, because half of our customer base don't want them, if we come out and say, we think we don't want them, well, then the people that says, I pay you, I have a big contract with you, I want it, you support me. So that's going to, the other thing is, if you have a water master, well, then all this goes away off the BRA, who is the big bad BRA, who makes bad water management decisions, and it's not, per se, on us anymore. So there's that's the good part of it.
We've been able to argue it round or flat, and be honest with you, and because there are positives and negatives. And I think as we get into seeing a piece of legislation that would create a water master, what we would want to make sure is that if it looks like something that is inevitable, maybe not now, but they're going to look at it again every 5 years from now into the future. And as droughts become more prolific and as water use goes up, it's likely that at some point in the future this will happen. We want to make sure it's done correctly. And if it's done correctly, we could likely be okay with it. We're not going to run out and fly a flag for it and say yay, but, you know. But I mean, there are ways that we could live with it.
Brian, who pays?
Yes,
and those are fees. Hired, appointed.
Water master is essentially, it's an employee of the TCEQ, the agency. Yeah, they're a hired person of TCEQ, and there are water masters that exist right now. In the Rio Grande is probably the most well known one. There's also one in the Concha, which was legislatively created, that one.
But think about the 42,000 square miles, the number of pickups that you're going to have to buy to police that, the number of boots, the number of bullets, the number of Kevlar vests, the number of things to do that. It's going to be, and then it's really, a water master comes into play during a draft.
So it may not be used every year.
Well, it just seemed like to me it's a tremendous burden, bureaucracy.
Is it
telling us what to do when, or whatever?
And that's been the position of several of our customers and several of the other water right holders in the basin have said it's an unnecessary layer of government is what some have said.
We'd have a checker checking on us, I guess.
Well, the issue that I see is very easy to see an example. When Dow has to get water from BRA, it's usually coming from up way upstream, and then when the water never gets down to Dow, there would have to be somebody that says, okay, you have water coming down this river, and it's not your water, you got to turn your pumps off. You can't make people turn their pumps off, so they can pull the water right straight out there. There's no person that's going to be watching to see who has the pump on when it's not their water coming down the river. The same way when there's a drought. These old water rights, like the Gulf Coast Authority has water rights from 1929, much older than BRA's water rights. Dow Chemical has 1929 water rights. But they're at the end of the river. So when the water gets released and it starts running down the river and people have their straws in and are pulling the water out and they have the younger water rights, then the water never gets down to the folks. Whether you have the right or not, if the water doesn't get to you, you can't get it out of the river. So that would be a reason why Dow and Gulf Coast might be in favor of having a water master. That's why I asked, why would TCEQ be against having a water master? The other thing is, who pays for it?
The water right holders.
And the water right holders have to pay for it. And some folks, especially those who are getting a benefit from taking water that's not theirs, don't want to pay to have somebody come in and police them. So that's another reason why you wouldn't want to have it. And BRA would probably do just fine because you're going to do right by your permits and only take the water you're supposed to anyway. So it wouldn't hurt BRA to have it, but it wouldn't necessarily help them either. So I can see why you wouldn't want to come down on either side.
Sure.
But folks down on the end of the river, that's a different story. We need the water to come rolling down that river so we can get our portion of it.
There's one subtlety about that. Your argument, I agree with everything you said, Carl. But that is both Dow and Gulf Coast, they have a 28, 29 water right, then they have some other ones.
They have some.
The water master is going to say, okay, you have to use your senior one first.
Right.
Rather than, I'm senior.
Exactly.
Right now, what's happening is that they have a tendency to use that all the way through and bring their junior rights with them. This one would segregate that and said, okay, for example, you got 10,000 acre feet, okay, you're done. Now then, it's his turn.
Right. I mean, it's bad either way, but if you let the water get all the way down to the end of the river and you don't use it, that's why I'm never against the citizen's operation permit, because it's going to go in the Gulf and become salt water. So we just want to get our fair share. And you all keep as much as you need up here that doesn't take away from the ones that come downstream. Our cities are really hard. We have a guy that came to our meeting, our water management meeting, and he has no idea how to calculate what goes on. But he's very concerned because our little cities try to get water out of the river, and if there's no water, it dials intake, and they can't get the water. So it gets pretty tough when it's a drought time, trying to figure out where they get your water from. And so
tough issue.
Water master may not be a bad idea. Maybe a bad idea.
To the extent that the cost would be passed along to our system rate customers, that is correct. That is correct. And the estimates on the cost based on TCEQ, what they've looked at, I think they looked at one, Jim, that was $500,000, $600,000 a year, which I don't know that that's enough. I think that's probably a little low. It would probably start with that. I think, again, given the size of the basin, it's probably higher than that. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.